Hello and welcome to the Locked and Lawyered Get Information Training. Today, we are talking about how to set your business up the right way. So in this training, we are going to cover what an entity is and why you need one. We'll talk about the different types of entities, tax considerations, DBAs and trade names, insurance, and the maintenance things that you need to know to make sure that you stay in good standing. So entity formation, what is it and why is it so important? Entity formation, it really creates liability protection. That's really what the main purpose is. The purpose, the main reason that we form an entity is to be sure that we are protecting your assets from liability. I want you to think about insurance. When it comes to our homes, our cars, our businesses, we have insurance, right? We get insurance. And the reason why we get insurance is to protect our investment in the event that something goes wrong. Entity formation is the same thing. It is the business insurance for your business. Without forming an entity, your personal assets are at risk in the event something goes wrong in your business. What are the options to choose from? Well, first we have the corporation. And when it comes to a corporation, there are several types of corporations. We have the C Corp, we have the S Corp, we have nonprofit corporations, and then we have limited liability companies, partnerships, and sole proprietorships. What should be considered when choosing a type of entity? So when we're looking to choose the type of entity that we want to form, we are going to be taking into consideration liability protection, the ease of formation, how easy is it to form? What are the tax consequences of such entity? What is the type of business that's going to be conducted? What might work for one business may not necessarily be the best entity for a different type of business. What are our plans for future expansion? Are we looking to grow? Do we want to possibly sell the business? Do we want to have equity partners? And then how easy is it for us to sell the business, liquidate, transfer, or dissolve the business? All of those are considerations to take into consideration when you're deciding the type of entity. So let's talk about the C Corp. This is our big box corporation. This is going to be the Amazons, the Googles, the McDonald's of the world. They offer the strongest protection to owners from personal liability, but they cost a little bit more to set up because they're a little bit more work. They're definitely more complex to maintain. You've got to have a board of directors. You've got to have board of director meetings, all types of records and reporting that needs to happen. The company is managed by the board of directors. The most important piece, I think, to point out when it comes to a C Corp is this whole concept of double taxation. What this means is that as a corporation, the corporation pays taxes on its profits. In addition to the corporation paying taxes, the shareholder, each shareholder in the company also pays taxes on whatever their share in the company is, and we call those dividends. Then we have the S Corporation. The S Corporation has all the same benefits of a C Corp. And the biggest piece to the S Corporation is that it allows a way for us to avoid the double taxation. So S Corporation really stands for subchapter S, which is a part of the tax code that allows corporations to form in a different way so that they don't have the double taxation piece. With that, all the profits and the losses pass through to the owner without the corporate tax. With an S Corp, in order for you to do this, you actually form as a corporation, no different than a C Corp, but there's a form that you file to make that S election. Now, there are a couple of limitations when it comes to having an S Corp. One is that you cannot have more than 100 shareholders. If you do, then you're not going to be able to make the S election. And in addition to that, all shareholders must also be U.S. citizens. With an S Corp, there is no federal income tax at the corporate level. The owner is paid a salary, and therefore they don't have to pay self-employment tax. Next, we have the nonprofit corporation. With a nonprofit corporation, these are typically going to be organized to do charity work, education, religious, literary business, and they are tax exempt, meaning they don't pay taxes. When it comes to a nonprofit, you've got to file paperwork in order to be recognized as a nonprofit, both at the state level as well as federal level. And you've probably heard of 501c3. The structure and management of a nonprofit is the same as a C Corp. Then we have our good friend, the limited liability company, also known as an LLC. This is the most common type of entity. This is very easy to form. Everyone's go-to entity is usually going to be the LLC. With an LLC, you're separating your business assets from your personal assets, and the profits and losses of the business pass through to your personal income without corporate taxation. Now, what this means is that there, when you go to file your taxes, you are going to have what's called a Schedule C, and that's where all of your business revenue and any expenses related to your business go there. And then whatever the net profit is, you're going to be taxed on that. You still have to pay self-employment tax when you have an LLC. Because you're not paying Medicare or Social Security, you do have the ability to make the S election and to be taxed as an S Corp in many states. And this company, this type of entity is best for medium to higher risk businesses, owners that have significant assets to protect, and owners who want to pay a lower tax rate than they would in a corporation. The LLC is the go-to for many. However, it's not always the best. So I'm always going to advise you to talk to an accountant as well as to an attorney to determine if the LLC is the best entity for you. Then we have partnerships. Partnerships are generally a voluntary contract between two or more people to start a business and to share in the profits and losses of that business. There are no tax returns that are filed on behalf of the partnership, and all of the profits and or losses pass through to each of the partners' individual tax return. The partnership remains in effect until there is only one owner left. And there is no liability protection for partners. This is the probably the biggest con of a partnership. And that's because each partner is liable to the extent of their assets or liabilities of the partnership. And that kind of almost is counterintuitive to our whole concept of liability protection by forming an entity. There is a specific type of partnership that you could create called a limited liability partnership. And in that regard, there is language in the partnership that states that each of the parties can be limited to their liability for the acts of their other partners. So this kind of cures that whole issue of being liable for the acts of your partner. When you have a partnership between spouses, there's definitely increased liability exposure for joint assets. If you are considering going into business with another person or multiple people, you don't have to necessarily do a partnership. You can form an LLC as a multi-member LLC. And that way you're going to have much more protection in terms of the entity being completely separate and your personal assets being separate. And then you would just have the operating agreement to detail what the percentages are and all of the points to the partnership. Then we have the sole proprietorship. This is the default. So if you do not formally form and file entity paperwork to form your business, you are going to be treated by the government as having a sole proprietorship. It presumes that there's just one owner. It's very easy to form. There's nothing that you file. There's no separate tax return to operate as a sole proprietor. And all of your income and expenses are on your Schedule C of your individual tax return. All liability flows to the owner. This is the danger. This is the risk of having a sole proprietorship. All of the assets are subject to the claims of creditors. So biggest advice, don't settle for this one. This is not the one that you want. And what we mean by all assets are subject to the claims of creditors, if something goes wrong and you get sued as a sole proprietor because you do not have a separate entity and you have not separated your business from you personally, all of your personal assets are up for grabs. So if you get sued and you lose and this person gets a $100,000 judgment against you, then they can attach that judgment to your home, to your personal bank account, to whatever they need to in order to satisfy that judgment. On the other hand, if you have formed an entity, so if you have an LLC or you have an S Corp and something goes wrong and that person sues the company, They are only permitted to get whatever assets the company has. They cannot go to your personal bank account or to your home because those are protected. The entity is completely separate from you personally. So that's the biggest point of this. And what I want you to get out of it is that we want to make sure your business is a completely separate entity from you personally. Next, we've got all kinds of documents that come into play when we're forming an entity. So I'm going to go through these just to make sure that you understand. So when you hear them, you know what they're referring to. First, we have the Articles of Organization, Articles of Incorporation, or Certificate of Registration. Depending on the type of entity, each of these may be called something different, but at the end of the day, they're all the same. They are the initial paperwork that you must file with your state in order to form the entity. Articles of Organization is what you're going to use when you're forming a LLC. Articles of Incorporation are when you are forming a corporation, right? That's kind of self-explanatory. Then we've got the governing documents. These are the documents that specifically lay out how the company is going to be run, who's in charge, how do we deal with profits, losses, and all kinds of things. We have bylaws. This is going to be that's the governing document for a corporation. We've got corporate minutes. So minutes is a record of all the actions and decisions made by the directors and the stockholders. We have a shareholder agreement. A shareholder agreement comes into play in a corporation that sets forth what each of the owners or the shareholders' rights and obligations are. Then we have a management or operating agreement. This is going to be for your LLC, and it sets forth the operation and the management rules of how your LLC is run. Then we have a partnership agreement. A partnership agreement sets forth the operating and management rules of a partnership. Stock certificate, this is what we give to each of the individual shareholders as evidence of their ownership interest in the corporation. Then we have articles of dissolution. This is what we file when we've made a decision to dissolve an entity or to close things down. Business transfer agreement, this is what we sign when we are transferring or selling the entire business or an interest in the business. And then we have an exit agreement. This agreement is something that we do when we have, let's say, a multi-member LLC and one of the members is leaving or an officer is leaving. Now we have the EIN number. So what is an EIN number? EIN stands for Employment Identification Number. This is essentially your business's social security number. Why do we need them? Because your business is almost like a little person. It's an intangible person. And so in order for the IRS and the bank and all of the other vendors or whoever else you're doing business with, in order for them to identify your business, they use an EIN number. How do we use them? When you go to open up your bank account, your bank account is going to be open in the name of your business, but there's got to be an EIN number attached to it. If you don't get one, it's going to be very difficult for you to be able to, number one, protect yourself against claims that could arise and people are going to, one of the defenses that people are going to raise is going to be, well, she doesn't even have an EIN number. So obviously she is her business. It's all one and the same. There is no personal liability protection. And that kind of goes against what we're forming an entity from altogether. Also with an EIN number, because you're going to have to file taxes each year. And even if you are an LLC or even if you are operating as a sole proprietor, you still want to have the EIN number to show and do everything in the name of the business. The biggest danger is to commingle your assets, commingle your funds between your business and your personal assets. That is the number one surefire way for anybody who has a claim against you to claim that your business is not really separate from you. It's all together. So having an EIN number, and it helps you to keep things separate, to file separate taxes, to have separate accounts and assets even. I mean, there are some people who even, you know, purchase cars or purchase property, purchase buildings, lease cars, do many things in the name of their business. The way that your business is able to do that is by having its own EIN number. So what are some best practices when it comes to taxes? You want to lay the proper foundation from the beginning, and this will save you tons of time and tons of money in the long run. You want to get your EIN number from the IRS. I want to give you a little tidbit here. There are many companies out here that are going to try to persuade you to purchase your EIN number through them, paying them a fee. It is free to get an EIN number. So make sure if you Google get an EIN number, you're going to get hit with all these other companies that want you to pay. If you're being asked to pay, that's a red flag that you're on the wrong website. Go to the IRS's website to get your EIN number. And it is not, there's no fee and you can get it immediately. You want to select the option to have it delivered to you online and you're good to go. Then if you decide to hire anyone, you want to make sure that you have all of your employees fill out an I-9 form, which states that they are permitted to work in the U.S., and a W-4 form, which gives you their social security number, and it's the document that you'll need to file in order to pay employment taxes on their behalf. You also want to make sure that if you've got any vendors or independent contractors that you're working with, even though they're not employees, but you're doing regular business with them, if you pay them $600 or more in 1 year, you want to make sure that you get a W-9 form from them. That's going to require them to give you their social security number or EIN number if it's a business, and you can issue them a 1099 at the end of the year. You want to make sure that you've opened all tax accounts that are necessary within your state, including sales tax accounts. Depending on your business, if you have to charge sales tax, you've got to have a tax account with your state. So you want to make sure that you have all of the proper tax accounts set up. If you have employees, there are employer tax accounts that you've got to have. You want to make sure that you have all of those set up from the very beginning. You want to hire an accountant to review your books and file your business taxes regularly. One of the biggest issues that a lot of entrepreneurs face is not being prepared when it comes to taxes. And so when you kind of just bury your head in the sand and let things go on too long, it can cause major issues down the road. My suggestion is that you meet with a tax professional at the very beginning to discuss your business, what your projections are, and get advice on how to set things up properly from the very beginning. I also recommend if you already have started your business that you do this annually. You meet with an accountant just to look at things to see, are you doing things the right way? Is there something that you're missing? Is there something that you could do better? DBAs and trade names. So DBA stands for doing business as. A DBA or a trade name is separate from the business's legal name. This can be the name of a program, service, event, or some other name. The reason why we register these names is to notify the public that you are doing business under a name other than your legal name. So let's say, for instance, we have a company that is called ABC Baking, right? And let's say it is a baking company, a bakery. But the name of a signature program that they have for weddings is, you know, let's just say Toasted Oats Cupcakes. That's the name. They have become very popular with this brand and they do weddings and they've got these cupcakes. So if they have an event and some people go to the wedding and they see all on their packaging, their branding everywhere, Toasted Oats Cupcakes or whatever. If someone gets sick and they want to go to sue the company, God forbid, but we have to recognize that bad things happen, and they go to sue the company and they go and search in the, let's say this is a Maryland business, they go to the Maryland business website and they go to search for that company and they can't find it. They're looking everywhere for Toasted Oat Cupcakes. They don't know that the name of the company is ABC. So because of that, what ABC would do is to register a DBA for Toasted Oats Cupcakes. And so the way that DBA would read is ABC Baking Company DBA, which stands for Doing Business as Toasted Oats Cupcakes. It's all about consumer protection and making sure that the public knows the business that they are doing, that they're working with or doing business with, or who they purchased from, that if something happens, they know how to get back to that company. Okay, very important to know, a DBA and a trade name is not a registered trademark. It's very different from a trademark. It is just putting the public on notice that when they see that name, that that name is a part of your company. A DBA or a trade name is not a legal entity. For example, there are some people who never form an entity. They are just a sole proprietor, but they may register a trade name because that's the name that they're doing business as. It is not a legal entity and it has no legal liability protection associated with it. If you register a DBA or trade name before you file your entity, you will be treated as a sole proprietor. Next, we have insurance. So when it comes to starting your small business, you always want to consider business insurance. And there are several different types that you need to know about. One is general liability insurance. This protects against property damage and bodily injury. Then we've got workers' compensation insurance. This gives medical care, lost wages, funeral expenses, and other protections for employees who experience a work-related injury. So if you have employees, you will need to have workers' compensation insurance in case someone gets hurt on the job. Business income insurance. This is also known as business interruption insurance. This protects against loss of revenue due to fire, theft, or wind, or other natural disasters. Data breach insurance, becoming increasingly popular over the last decade because so many of us have online businesses or we're storing information online. If someone's sensitive information is hacked or lost or stolen, data breach insurance is going to protect you in that regard. Then we have professional liability insurance. So if your business makes a mistake in your services, very popular for doctors, accountants, lawyers, having professional liability insurance. Auto insurance and of course property insurance also protects company vehicles or property in the event that something happens. Business succession planning, planning for the unexpected. So you should have, even in the beginning when you are just starting your business, I want you to start thinking about what happens if something goes wrong. We all would like to think that everything is going to go smoothly and we're going to be in business forever. We're going to live forever. But the truth is that's just not the case. You should have a written agreement that sets forth one, how and under what terms a transfer of ownership will take place. And then if and when there are certain triggering events that may occur. So in the event that you become disabled, if you're in a car accident, if you pass away, if a member leaves, if there's divorce, I call these the four D's. Disability, death, departure, and divorce are all events that we must plan for and set forth what will happen to the business in the event one of the four D's takes place. If you are the sole owner of the business, you should definitely name a person who can step in for you in the case of a disability or your death. What would happen to your business? And in this document, and I have prepared these for several entrepreneurs and not, I have never done the same one twice. Every single business is different. Every single business owner's preferences are different. But in this document, you are going to set forth exactly what should happen. And for some people, it may be that things get wound down. And so you want to give specific steps to what they would do to wind things down. Should they contact all clients and, you know, make sure all bills are paid. And then whatever's left in the bank, in the business bank account, give it to your spouse or to your kids or set up a trust. Or there's lots of different options when it comes to this. Even if you're just starting out, you want to begin to think about this and have these conversations. One thing that we learned, particularly in 2020 when COVID-19 hit, was that it is very important for business owners to plan for the unexpected. Now we're going to talk about how do you stay in good standing. Every state has filing requirements that you have to adhere to in order to keep your entity active and in good standing. You want to get very familiar with whatever those are and make sure that you are filing your annual report and paying any fees associated with maintaining your entity. You must make sure that you are filing your state and federal taxes annually. If you change your address, or if your resident agent changes, or if they change their address, you want to make sure that you notify your state business office and you file any amendments that are necessary so that your current business information is always on file. If you decide that you're going to close the business, you should file the proper paperwork to dissolve the business. And if you decide to do business in another state, so if you move or you're doing business in another state or you're opening up another location, you want to be sure to look into whatever your new state's requirements are for what they call a foreign entity. You are considered a foreign entity to a state if you are a, if your business was formed in another state. So you want to make sure that you are doing that. And that is it. So I want you to take action now. Download the entity formation checklist, go through these questions, see where you have issues, where are there things that you need to learn more about, where are there things that you need to get some help with, and make your action steps and assign yourself a date by which you're going to get it done. All right, let's get to work.